So, was Bob Davis just getting sloppy, or...
Huh?
Bob Davis, is he getting sloppy, or what's the story?
Messed up his leg this week. He had about four hairs. First one he didn't do, had growths and tumors. Saturday he had growths and tumors and about four times in one testimony.
And he was aware that that's not supposed to go in there.
Yeah, he's aware. I just don't know where he might be.
Out of his mind. You and I have lunch together. Wouldn't that be
tough? No! Been a new letter, but there have been a lot of doubts about it, that there was. New Scene's Jim Vargas has been there working on it all day for us. He's in the East Bay right now. We'll get the latest on the situation. Jim, what is the situation on the letter?
Man, just a little while ago, I was told that KPFA radio did not receive any communication today from the Symbionese Liberation Army. Although since mid-morning, about two dozen newsmen have gathered in front of the Berkeley radio station's offices under the presumption that something had been received. It's possible that a letter approximating an SLA-type communique came in today's mail. KPFA isn't saying. At any rate, if there was such a similar letter, it proved to be false. A KPFA spokesman told me a little while ago also that they had received hundreds of letters, mostly sympathizing with the Hearst family, some with donations, just like other TV and radio stations have. Everything has been forwarded to Hillsborough.
All right, Jim, we do know that there have been crank letters. As a matter of fact, we received one here at News Scene that the San Francisco Police Department were able to break and find the man responsible for it. So as of this moment, no new letter from the Symbionese Liberation Army. Thank you, Jim. Standing by right now at the Hearst home in Burlingame is News Scene's John Lester. We understand the Hearsts have just arrived there, and John has a late report on that. John?
2, 3, testing.
By the way, and Simon had these comments on the original Patty vs. tape. Listen.
Slowing down. I'm okay. I had a few scrapes and stuff, but they washed them up and they're getting okay, and I've caught a cold, but they're giving me pills for it and stuff.
Okay, what do you make of that, Tommy?
Well, other than the mom and dad, I'm okay. I'm more interested in the fact that she says that she has received some medication, given some pills for it. I would say that she does not have a cold. The medication given is probably for the scrapes and bruises she had received originally. Maybe she caught a slight infection. She's taking an antibiotic.
What was the cold?
It's difficult to say, but probably that pertains to the circumstances under which she is kept, possibly an unheated room or a cold place, a barn, warehouse, something like that.
She might be trying to say something.
It could very well be. She's not lying, but she's not telling the truth.
But she is deceiving.
She is deceiving, absolutely.
I'm not being scalloped or beaten or unnecessarily frightened.
Indications are there. She says she's not being starved. She's certainly not being fed in the manner in which she's accustomed. She's hurting, but not being starved per se. No, she's not being beaten. There's no indication that she's been physically abused. Frightened? Sure, she's frightened, but this is a normal thing.
I've heard some press reports, and so I know that Steve and all the neighbors are okay, that no one was really hurt. And I also know that the SLA members here are very upset about press distortions.
I want to hear, we got a reaction there. The SLA is certainly disturbed, not over press distortions. I have any idea what they're disturbed about. It is not press distortions.
It says here, guy is not telling the truth.
He's not telling the truth at all. Not in that.
Okay.
What's been happening? They have nothing to do with the August 7th movement.
Well, let's stop it right there. The August 7th movement. Pretty good. Very, very good. I would say
she believes that to be true.
She believes that they do have nothing to do with that August 7th movement. That's a non-stretch statement.
And so it went, and Mr. Tomlin said several other statements, including the statement that they were responsible for shooting down a helicopter was not true, that she seemed to be trying to communicate certain clues, that she was not terrified, but she was coping with the situation of her captives rather well. He said a number of other statements are clearly false or misleading, but he feels it's not in her best interest for us to discuss those publicly at this time. We'd like to make clear at this point that Mr. Tomlin's comments are entirely his own opinions, and we have no reason to either believe or disbelieve the accuracy or the effectiveness of this psychological stress evaluator. I've got a little background on it there and found that it's in rather common use with the FBI and law enforcement agencies all over the country, and it's one of those new electronic tools that you either trust implicitly or you throw up and say, we just don't know, and according to the people who make it, the electronic outfit back in Springfield, Virginia, I believe, they say that it's 99% positive if the person reading those tapes knows how to evaluate it. Mr. Tomlin took a 10-month course from them, spent 10 months learning how to interpret the graph, so he should know.
Okay, well, he's made some statements in there that interest me. He says a non-stress statement. They're looking for something like you'd look on a polygraph. It is a lie detector for a piece of tape that was recorded. And as I understand it, they say this is more infallible than the lie detector test given on a person because there aren't the stress points all over the body.
He said that's the whole point. He said that there is no way that a person can deceive this machine. He said, for example, I had a brown shirt on. He said, if you say, and I did, and he showed me how. He said, what color is your shirt? And I said, brown. And he said, you see, that's wrong. He said, that's an untruthful answer because it's not brown, it's brown and white.
Right.
It's that good.
It's that close. And so a lot of people do have faith in the machine, and a lot of people are doing things with it, and we wanted to show you that. There were some things said, again, as Jerry said, that could not be stated now from the tapes that he found, but they will go into the hands of the proper authorities.
Usually lucky tapes are onslaught, but there always be
more. The brother of one of the Hearst kidnapping suspects will talk to the mother of the other, and will listen to Patricia Hearst's tape as it goes through the psychological stress evaluator. The full story next, right here on Channel 7 News Scene.
Today, the Bay Area's award-winning television news service with Van Amberg and Jerry Jensen, Pete Giddings with the weather, and John O'Reilly with sports. And now for News Scene, Van Amberg.
Good evening. Here's what's happening. It burned very fast and very bright. A 3-alarm fire in San Francisco late this afternoon. News Scene cameras were there exclusively at 17th and Folsom Streets as 80 firemen worked quickly to try to put out the flames. They were in the Reliance truck trailer manufacturing plant and burned where brand new truck and trailers, arc welders, huge tires, expensive tools, and one entire section of that plant. Luckily, no injuries. Fire investigators say the fire is very suspicious because it was the last day for business for the plant. Employees would not have been working there after today anyway. The fire lasted for about 15 minutes. It did a lot of damage. No estimates yet. The investigation continuing at this hour. A big 3-alarmer in San Francisco. Two escaped convicts are now the prime suspects as the kidnappers of Patricia Hearst. The story broke last night by the San Francisco Chronicle is not official yet, according to the FBI. They say they are merely going after 30-year-old Donald DeFries and 29-year-old Thero Wheeler because they're fugitives. But photographs of the two bear a strong resemblance to the composite sketches of the FBI of the kidnappers. News Scene's Don Sanchez has a report now on the two suspects.
Donald DeFries met Thero Wheeler while the two were in Vacaville. They corresponded with a number of people, including Russell Little, suspect in the Marcus Foster killing. DeFries was transferred to Soledad in December of 1972. It was during this time he took the name of Sin K and fantasized politically. Most of the inmates thought it was all talk. Now those same inmates have heard the voice on the tape that was sent to the Hearst last Tuesday. They say it sounds like DeFries.
Greetings to the people and fellow comrade, brothers and sisters. My name is Sin Q, and to my comrades I am known as Sin. I am a black man and a representative of black people. I hold the rank of General Field Marshal in the United Federated Forces of the Symbionese Liberation Army.
It was almost a year ago that Donald DeFries escaped from this medium security facility here at Soledad. Authorities inside will tell us little about what DeFries did while in prison. In fact, the only thing they're letting us know is that he was held here for possession of a homemade bomb, possession of stolen property, robbery, and assault with force. As far as any political activity that went on while he was in prison and when he took the name Sin Q, the authorities are answering with two words: no comment. Now, this is a medium security prison. Had he been in tighter security prisons prior to this?
No comment.
Okay, he was at Vacaville. How does that compare to this security prison?
It's a different type of facility in many ways.
Was he a model prisoner?
I can't comment on that.
Was he well-behaved?
No comment.
How's the weather?
No comment.
Originally, DeFries was angry and erratic, and his movements were restricted while in prison, but officials detected a change in his attitude. So in December of 1972, he was transferred to Soledad's minimum security section. 3 months later, he escaped. In Soledad, this is Don Sanchez, Channel 7 News Scene.
Well, of course, all of us are very concerned about what these latest bits of information coming out might do to the case. Randolph Hearst, just late this afternoon, the father of the girl kidnapped, says he does not think the new developments will endanger Patricia's life, and that he is now continuing to try to put together the food program demanded by the SLA. Now, that tape of the Symbionese Liberation Army leader that we just heard a little bit ago was played by newsmen for Donald's mother today. That would be Donald DeFries, who was the man there. Mrs. Mary DeFries.
Here this morning at the San Francisco Chronicle building. Chronicle says it's not on.
Very quickly to get this story together. Earlier this week, the People's Temple Christian Church of California donated $2,000 to the Hearst family. We were there the night that they did it. Tonight, the members of the multiracial congregation are now offering themselves as hostages if and when the SLA demands to leave the country. Their leader is the Reverend Jim Jones, and he talked about it to us.
We're offering to be hostages if it would serve a purpose to this group. We had done it privately last week to the Hearst, but somehow it leaked out. We feel that if an interracial group that has great concern for social justice would be willing to serve as hostages, particularly probably when it comes to the time that they'll want, as most revolutionary groups, to be released from the country, we would be glad to serve in that capacity.
Reverend Jones also told us that the People's Temple Christian Church hopes that by speaking out like they're doing, they'll influence the SLA now to release Patricia Hearst. Lots more coming up on News Scene. Frank Sinatra is going to take one more.
Well, the law organizations who deal with the citizens who would be the recipients of the food that might be distributed for the release of Miss Hearst, or as payment for the release of Miss Hearst, are now making their positions known. Today, the Western Addition Project Area Committee, known as WAPAC, held a news conference to say they would accept the food and distribute it to an estimated 10 to 20,000 people in the Fillmore district. They contend it's because blacks and Asians were brought here as slave labor and have never been allowed to participate in the distribution of American wealth that we find ourselves in this position today. And Arnold Townsend, chairman of WAPAC, elaborates.
In a tragic situation like this, we feel that the most glaring tragedy has not been brought to light, and that tragedy is the fact that we have so many poor and needy people in California that it takes $400 million to feed them for one lousy week. With the foregoing evidence before us, it would be incorrect for poor people not to accept or to feel guilty about accepting or distributing the food. While we realize that many people will say that this is playing politics with the lives of the poor and hungry people, we say that politics have always played a major factor in whether or not the poor were going to eat, work, or survive. One merely has to witness the realities of the poverty programs, the Great Society, or Richard Nixon's black capitalism program to see that this is so. In fact, poor people's welfare has always depended on handouts related to how they voted. And frequently, when they voted in a winner, the handouts were still not forthcoming. consequently, our concern once again is with the feeding of poor people throughout the world by any means necessary. However, we would have certain requests ourselves, that both sides adhere to all the agreements that have been made between them, and number two, that there be no police involvement in the distribution of the food.
What you are really doing is that you're saying we'll accept the food and we're not going to question or get ourselves involved in any way with how the food was provided,
under
what circumstances.
That is correct. That is correct. We think it. We think it's very clear that the conditions to feed people all over the world have always been political conditions. We send our care packages out of politics. Frequently, when countries such as North Vietnam and China and many other poor countries quit relating to the United States, break off diplomatic relations or whatever, they quit receiving care packages. They're still hungry. They're still hungry. But because of politics, they no longer receive food.
Townsend says his organization takes no position on whether the release of Miss Hurst should be guaranteed if the food is provided. He says this is not a decision WAPAC is being asked to make. And incidentally, the Black Panthers, who also have indicated that they would accept and distribute the food, I believe have said, though, that it must be contingent on the guaranteed release of Miss Hurst before they would do that.
A telephone bomb threat to the Chronicle.
Very important for...
I don't want to get into a discussion of it because I want to say something very intemperate and something which can be very inflammatory, and that is the story of the Hearst girl. And I would appreciate it if we did not talk about that, okay? We can talk about other things, but not that specific story. But anything else, you know, we're wide open. Now, give me the telephone numbers.